All right.
Check.
Ooh. What was that noise? It sounded like you have a wombat over there.
Me?
Yeah, you. No,
I
mean, Patrick.
I do have a wombat.
Hello and welcome to What's the Deal, the Seinfeld review show that has three handsome hosts. Each week we dissect every episode of Seinfeld in chronological order. With me today, as always, is Christopher Young.
Hello.
And Patrick Armstrong.
Hello.
I'm Cameron Wong, and this is episode 35, Three Fiver. And today we'll be looking at season 3, episode 19, The Limo. Chris, welcome back.
Thanks.
Glad you might to be not back. Know this, while you were away, we blew up in Sweden. It's true.
Oh, I mean, I knew.
Actually, Northern Europe.
It's all over the Swedish press. You know, you can't really escape it.
Northern Europe. Tell us a little bit about the demographic breakdown, Patrick.
People in Northern Europe like us. We got Felix.
Felix, I love that guy.
We got someone who tweeted us a picture of George wearing a big hat.
She tweeted us again.
Oh, yeah? All our other tweets are indecipherable to me because they are not in English or French, the two languages I speak.
Yeah, so...
That's about it.
The other person who tweeted us, I don't know how to pronounce this account name, but it's...
Turi Stiltilvaron.
Yeah, something like that. And she said this. If I'd smash a cactus from Carl Johan's park into Felix's head after listening, it would have been flying all over the place... /GF. I don't know what that means, but Felix, watch out.
Yeah. So Turi's coming for you.
Chris, did you hear about Carl Johan's park?
No.
Well, our friend Felix is from a town. It's called Norrköping. And there's a place called Carl Johan's park, and it's a giant cactus park. And I raised some... very practical safety concerns that it's not safe to have a park made out of cacti.
How do you think the other people...
Why?
How do you think people have sent us, like, a Facebook message or, like, the other people have tweeted us that we never talk about, Phil? You just gotta have a good tweet, you know?
They've had good tweets. Who else can we talk about? Michael Zepiel, who's a great guy. Mike Seeps. Was upset when we missed an episode one week, and he tweeted us, and he was sympathetic towards us, so I like him a lot. He's a nice guy. Justin tweeted us. Your mom tweeted us.
Mm-hmm. Curbcast.
Curbcast tweeted us.
Really?
Yeah. They gave us a specific shout-out on a show.
Yeah.
Did you listen to that? I didn't even see this.
I did. It was a subtle show. It was a subtle shout out. They made a reference to us. They didn't say the name of our show. They just mentioned that other podcast.
What did they say about us?
They just said, I don't remember. Something a little bit smug, a little bit
Why we're rivals.
Yeah. We're keeping the rivalry going.
Don't get me started on
So, Christopher, how are you today?
I'm pretty good. Actually, I don't know. I don't know if I even want to say this, but I think I may have got the worst haircut I've ever received today.
Oh, tell us about it.
My hair was just getting really long, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've been
That's often of, the pre-haircut state.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And, you know, I've been kind of going back and forth between... Am I going to just get short, you know, again, short, like keep it short for the summer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I going to just take the sides off and still let the top be kind of long? And I'm at my barber's, and he just seems like he's not really, he seems just a little bit, seemed distant today, you know?
Uh-huh.
Just wasn't really chatting a lot.
Cutting your hair through a tunnel.
Yeah, and like halfway through, he's just he was like, "Here, you want to read some Playboy?"
Where is
but
this
he
barber shop?
Me every time. It's in Toronto, and I asked him if he watched Seinfeld so I could talk about Watley's penthouse. a dentist practice. And he's like, yeah, but that's porn. Playboy's not porn. I'm like, okay. But so I was saying, you know, I wasn't sure what to do, short or long. And he's like, okay, well, let's start with the sides. You want those short? I'm like, yeah. So he's just, you know, he's got the buzzer. He's taking the sides down. And I'm like, yeah, we should probably do the whole thing. He's doing it. And then I'm like, actually, you know what? He's just finished up the sides. I'm like, you know what? The top, let's do the top long. We'll see how that works. He's like, okay. Then he just stops. He just doesn't do anything to the top. He doesn't, like, even it out or anything. He didn't even show me with the mirror in the back. He's like, well, here's the wash, and he's done. And I'm like, okay, it looks fine right now. And as I'm on the bus, I can just sort of see my reflection, and I'm like, I don't think it looks fine. And then I was in the Wendy's getting a milkshake before I got home, and there was this girl, and she's kind of cute, and she's looking at me. I'm like, oh, that's good. Maybe it's good. Then I get home. It's not. She was looking at me because I looked ridiculous.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and request that in a moment, I'm going to make some snide comments, and then we will not post this to the show, but I would like you to send me a picture of your haircut because I would like to see it for myself.
Okay, well, what I'll do is I'll send you a photo of it as is now, because I woke up and it's so lopsided.
So just kind of style it the way that you would have it, though. Just kind of like push it with your hands.
It sounds kind of like you just have a bad barber. Like,
I agree. I'm not going to him again.
How much are you paying for these haircuts?
$25.
Oof. That's too much for a bad haircut. For another $10, you can get a really good haircut.
Chris goes for the lending library there. I mean, I'll tell you this much right now. I don't want any sort of world where I'm conflating arousal with haircuts.
Mm-mm. No kidding. You know, that cape is not...
that backwards cape?
It gives me the double cape. I do like that.
A double, like, front and back?
And then he just puts two capes on. And
on the front for what? Like, the power of your hair? Like, he's going to cut it and it's going to fall down on one cape and it's not enough?
Usually the one cape isn't enough. I walk
it's like
away
an from airlock.
It's not. I walk away from every other haircut with, you know, I'm itchy. I got a little bit of straggles on my neck and stuff down my shirt.
He's got good cape technique.
What double cape is good.
He's a little pushy on the Playboy. And
what
he
does
gives
two
bad
capes
haircuts.
Do for you? How does the second cape stop hair from going down your neck?
It's like wearing two condoms, Cameron. You get twice you get twice as many not pregnant. Huh? Yeah.
Three times the breakage rate.
Right.
All right. Well, you know what? I've got exciting news. Patrick had a haircut today, and you look smashing.
Oh, thank you. I've gotten a few compliments.
Yeah, you look all right. You look vaguely like Hitler Youth.
I do. See, I have blonde hair, and, you know, like the shorter haircuts that are kind of in fashion right now that the barbers like to give. Leave some on the top. Cut the sides short. I look a lot like Hitler Youth. Actually, I noticed in this episode that the guy in the limo, he has kind of a similar haircut to me.
Now, the reason why I made that joke is because years ago you got a haircut and someone told you that, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. He said Aryan Youth haircuts were very popular right now.
Wow.
And then he sent me six photos of Aryan
Youth. That's
what
I kind of wanted.
Exactly
I just
like
wanted
me.
A straight...
Oh, don't say that's what you wanted. Say you want a nice haircut.
I just wanted a regular-looking Hitler haircut. And now
Well, you got to pay $35 for a good Aryan Youth haircut.
I'm going to have to cut all of these references to Chris's wanton lust for a Nazi haircut.
Mine?
Well, how are you doing, Cameron? I see you did not get a haircut today.
I'm doing well. I have not had a haircut, that is true. But I'm thinking about getting one soon. It's grown out long since last time, and I liked it a lot when I had it. It was good.
Yeah.
I saw Star Trek last night.
Mm-hmm.
Fan sneak peek, which, I guess I misspelled peak, and I got auto-corrected to peak, like the top of a mountain. And then a Twitter bot sent me a message saying, I think you meant sneak peek. And the account is called, Hidden Mountain, and it's a picture of a mountain with a balaclava on its head.
That's really funny. Man, I want to make a Twitter bot now. That's great.
I mean, I felt both embarrassed and also a great sense of warmth that someone spent the time to make such a useless app.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Other news?
I got a Twitter bot about poutine once.
Did you just write the word poutine?
I just wrote the word poutine, and some poutine Twitter bot was just like, retweeted it.
Was it about the poontition?
You said poontition. That's different.
Poutition? Was it the poutition?
What are you talking about?
So, was it Wendy's? Someplace was running an ad campaign at Wendy's to make poutine the official food of Canada, and it encouraged people to sign the poutition for it, which did literally sound like it had to do with fecal matter.
A little bit. Wow.
That's a terrible idea. You know, you feel like someone somewhere would, you know, maybe just call it a poutine petition. That's enough.
You don't
You don't need to make a portmanteau that sounds like poop.
Well, poutine already has that sounds like poo thing in it. So just embrace the poo.
And whatever happened to Pierre Poutine?
Yeah. Who's that?
Who's that, Chris? He's the greatest scandal maker in Canadian foods. Stole the election for the Conservatives.
Yeah. Oh. Hey, speaking of scandals, I was playing Cranium the other night, and I had one
you
of those...
You played Cranium? Was your girlfriend playing Cranium?
She was, but under duress.
Who got her to play Cranium? I can't believe this.
We were with her old high school friend. We were at some unfamiliar person's house, and they were insisting on Cranium. They had it all out. It would have been very socially awkward. She didn't know them very well. It's harder to review.
How many years now have I known Emily?
I don't know, 4, 5 maybe?
Is that it?
Yeah.
So, like, I've known Emily for, like, 12 years now.
Emily played Cranium with me, too.
No. After all these years, I think I've played a board game with Emily maybe twice.
Well, she hates it.
I know, and yet, for this other person, she did it.
But anyway, I had to do one of those ones where I had to just, like, be a person and describe who I am. Mm-hmm. So I described, I used to be Peter McKay's girlfriend. Mm-hmm. I was a member of his caucus.
I've got it.
Okay.
It's Belinda Stronach.
Very good.
I had it on that first
one. I said, you know, I was like the heiress to a fortune. You know, I broke up with my, like, Peter McKay on the same day that I switched parties.
Yeah.
To get a cabinet position? I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
To the Liberal Party, you know, the whole thing.
She dated Ty Domi.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Peter McKay called her a dog.
Yep. Like, the whole thing. And I think she ran for leadership of the Liberal Party, too. Did not do very well.
Yeah, that is correct.
The whole thing, but no one blank looks. No one got it. I knew, though, that you would get it.
I'm
a big fan of Canadian politics. And, like, 2002 era Canadian political scandals.
So, if you'd like to brush up on Canadian scandals from the early 2000s, head on over to whatsthedealshow.com. There we've got a list of every scandal that's ever happened in Canada. It's a list of 5 things, including Patio Gate. There we also have the show notes for today's episode. A picture that Chris Young is going to make just for you, lucky listener. I'll let you decide which one of you that is. And we've got back episodes.
The hot one.
Other business. We got it all.
Are we going to talk about who rigged the petition? Because I want to know why it didn't work. I feel like there needs to be some sort of holiday for poutine.
It'll happen. So if you're not familiar with poutine, in Canada, it is a dish which has spread from the...
If you're not familiar with poutine, stop listening right now.
It's not popular outside
of... I would say the majority of the world is not familiar with poutine. One time I was in Chicago, and poutine was French fries with an egg on top.
So, the fine people of La Belle Province created a dish of French fries, gravy, and curds of cheese. Now, that might sound like a heart attack in a bowl, but don't worry. We've tinkered with the recipe, and now you can also get it with bacon, chives, pulled pork.
Caramelized onions.
My favorite, is the poutine eggs Benny.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so good.
One day, Chris, you'll have it again. Oh, you will be together.
So good.
So, all that stuff out of the way, here's today's episode. In the limo, Jerry arrives in from Chicago, delayed flight. George is there to pick him up, but George's terribly unreliable vehicle has died. And so now, left stranded, Jerry and George concoct a plan to hijack somebody else's limo ride. But the limo ride does not go as planned, but not before they can pull Kramer and Elaine into the shenanigans. Good description.
Yeah, very good. Congratulations.
Thank you. Patrick, why don't you take us into this episode?
Yep, so the monologue. Jerry has an appropriate monologue talking about airport and airport vendors. Did you realize that things at the airport are more expensive than outside the airport?
Because that was inflation.
He brought that to our attention.
You know, it's funny though, because do you think, what I thought about that joke is that that joke will be relevant forever. Do you think there'll ever be a point where products in the airport will cost the same as they do locally?
No, why would they? They can charge whatever they want. You've been on a 4-hour flight, you're really hungry. Your only option is what's in the airport. They
Subway.
Can charge whatever they want.
See, I have no real problem with this. I mean, it sucks, but it's just it's one of the things that, you know, you accept. What drives me crazy is at
Shoe
Pearson.
Shine prices.
Oh, I know. They don't even get the...
Toronto Pearson Airport.
Toronto Pearson Airport is places... There's a bunch of them that don't accept debit. Places that don't accept debit in general drive me nuts. But if you're in an airport, you know, you're tired, you just want to get something to eat, it's like, oh, no, I don't accept debit. You know what? Go stuff yourself.
That's one way to express those feelings.
For non-Canadian listeners, almost everywhere in Canada has accepted debit for more than 10 years, maybe 15 years. And it's probably the most common form of payment.
Aside from the
personal
check. Yeah,
we use debit
check.
To pay for poutine.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I don't know. This is, it's a fine monologue. It's a thing about the world. I do think the idea that the whole airport system is propped up by the airport prices is a pretty funny idea. Because, you know, it's reminiscent of, like, the movie theater, where it's well known that movie theaters make most of their money from popcorn.
What? I thought that was fair value. Are you trying to tell me popcorn doesn't cost $10?
Well, in the movie theater, it does.
You know, speaking of Jerry Seinfeld stand-up, geez, I should have put this in our exceedingly long intro. Do you know who I saw last week?
Jerry Seinfeld?
Jerry Seinfeld.
Wow.
You guys had coffee or something?
He took me for a ride in his car.
Oh. Which one?
The old one. But you know what? He still got it. He's still very funny, and he didn't bring up this joke. I just want to mention that I saw Jerry Seinfeld. Maybe I'll talk about it on the outro.
Yeah.
There's a little teaser. Now the viewers, or the listeners,
now
they're going to stick around now.
Yeah. So, speaking of the airport, George is at the airport picking Jerry up. He's trying to find where Jerry's gate is. Sorry. Cameron just showed me a ridiculous picture.
You drew that picture.
I know, but it's ridiculous. It's a poop with... It's an anthropomorphic poop with a big penis.
And he's saying...
I'm Simon.
What's he saying?
I'm Simon.
Chris, where's this haircut picture?
I'm not doing it. I'm sitting down. I'm not doing it right now.
Wait, you've just... Use the front-facing camera on your phone. I know your phone's right next to you.
Well, there's not enough light in my room.
Oh, good grief.
All right, you keep doing the podcast. I'll be back with a photo.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah. So, George is at the airport. He's there desperately looking at the gate for trying to find Jerry's gate. And he was late, you know, trying to find Jerry. And eventually, he's reunited with Jerry.
So, at this beginning scene, we have that classic... George in the uncivilized society amongst people that won't help them at all.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think it is that George is always constantly surrounded by these people that have no sense of society whatsoever?
I think it's that he's extremely unpleasant and is always, you know, looks frazzled and yelling at people.
I mean, when the front lip of his bald spot, like, or the hair is just, like, kicked up in the air,
yeah.
He looks insane. But, I mean, he does just ask, excuse me, do you have the time? And the man won't do it.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's because he's bald. Maybe bald people get treated poorly.
Bald prejudice.
Yeah.
Hmm. I mean, it does, like, there are some times where a request from a stranger in public is too much, but I don't think this one is. Like, I think you were with me once years ago when a guy at 11 p.m. in the middle of the night, or I guess not the direct middle, but around the late night time, stopped us and asked if any of us had a cell phone that he could use.
Mm-hmm.
That's too much of an ask.
Yeah.
And whoever.
Now, Chris, what do you think? Do you think it's unreasonable for someone to just give you the time if they're wearing a watch? It's unreasonable, right?
Absolutely.
We knew you'd be on our side, Chris.
There was one, I forget who used to do a bit about this. It might have been John
Jerry
Stewart
Seinfeld?
Or something. Was it?
I don't know.
I don't think, no. It was people that, like, when you ask them for the time, they basically, if they don't have a watch on, they just kind of point to their wrist as opposed to saying, I don't know. And their comment was, it's like asking where the washroom was and pointing to your crotch.
Is it?
It's not really.
I
think the build to that bit is good. But the payoff is not great. But yeah, so eventually George is reunited with Jerry.
Fine.
and lets him know about the car, and they see this card, like, you know, all the limo drivers at the gate waiting to pick someone up, waiting for O'Brien. And Jerry mentions that this guy was late for his flight, they wouldn't let him on, and he was screaming they needed to get to Madison Square Garden, didn't let him on the flight.
I like that when George says, my car broke down, that Jerry's mad at him and says, that car? When he tells him, like, he should get a different car, he has no job. George is a bum.
Yeah, and Jerry doesn't even have a car.
I don't get it. I don't get it at all. Like, I'm not sure. It's just like how they keep calling him Biff, even though all these horrible things keep happening to him. Like, yeah. Death of a Salesman is not a happy story. It's a bad parallel.
Yeah, well, they're pretty cruel to George.
It's that baldism again.
Yeah. And so anyway, they see this limo, and George suggests that they should take it. And you know, they concoct a whole kind of cockamamie plan. Jerry is Dylan Murphy and George is Colin O'Brien, and they're gonna take this limo into town.
Now, Dylan Murphy, it's a great name.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
I think it looks fine. You look like the singer from that album Red, Yellow, Blue.
Oh, the Born Ruffians?
Born Ruffians. Yeah, you look good.
Yeah, it's fine after,
he's even,
like,
from Toronto.
But it's all piled up on top of your head. Like, if that was...
That's the problem. There's no layering. It needs to get layered.
It is a little piled, but that's kind of the style right now.
Looks but also, good. That's kind of bedhead. It's not horrible. It's just... It was more that he just stopped, you know? The result isn't really the issue so much as, like, I was just so unimpressed, like, okay, well, then I guess I'm going to not do anything else.
Well, he's a bad barber. You should go to someone else. Pay more than $25 for a haircut.
It's just so great that you're back on the show, because we were starting to have way too much structure to these shows.
Very focused.
So, Dylan Murphy.
So, yeah, so Jerry is... Dylan Murphy and George is Colin O'Brien, and they're gonna take this limo, and the limo driver buys it.
Yeah, so he does.
The next scene, they're on the limo, and George is busting. He's excited.
George claims that it's the greatest moment of his life, which seems to indicate that the greatest moment of George's life was his best lie and cheat ever.
See, my issue is, you know, it's what he calls the greatest moment of his life. And so what does he do? He calls his mom.
He just has to.
I don't want to know. Like, can you imagine what George did then when he, like, lost his virginity?
He called his mom. Right away. What did you do, Chris?
I think I said thank you.
I'm sure she appreciated your politeness.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. If something super great happened to me, one of the first people I would call, if not the first, depending on the news, is I would call my mother.
I would just tweet that shit.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Mom, to show you how much I care...
No, I'm not a mom, just, you know, everybody else. My mom's not following me on Twitter.
Like, if you won the lottery, wouldn't you call... I'd call my mom probably first.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You don't want all of your friends knowing you won the lottery right away.
But your mom is not one of your friends. She's your mom.
That's why I wouldn't tweet that stuff right away. The lottery thing.
So you would call your mom.
Yeah, I'd call my mom. Like, you know what? If I won one of the roll up the rim things, I'd tweet that before calling my mom.
You know what? That last roll up the rim to win, I didn't even win a free coffee or win a donut.
I didn't either. I didn't win a damn thing.
I won two coffees, but think about the volume of Tim Hortons I drink relative to you two.
Oh, I'm up there with you.
Every single day.
So am I.
So
I'm every day.
If people don't know about what Roll Up the Rim to Win is, in Canada, there's a popular franchise of donut. It's more than a donut store now. What was traditionally a sort of donut bakery and is now kind of like a...
Oh my God, what's wrong with you people? You don't know what poutine is. You don't know what debit is.
They live in a different country from us, Chris.
I don't care.
The majority of our listeners do not live in Canada.
It's a popular chain of restaurants that are kind of like... I don't know, it's not quite like a McDonald's, but, you know, they sell soup and sandwiches and donuts and coffee and tea, and they have this great event where they combine my two favorite passions, which is going to that restaurant and gambling. And beneath the paper rim, you roll the rim up and you could win a prize. And it's rigged because no one wins.
Except for those smug people on TV commercials.
Those fat cats up in Ontario.
Yeah.
Right.
So what if you have seven times the population?
You know what someone said to me? I asked, you know, I was talking to one of the Hortons people, and I kind of jokingly said, it's like, hey, which one's the one with the winner? And she's like, she says, it's the small ones. And that's the problem. I never order a small anything from Tim Hortons.
Well, you know what, Chris?
If it's...
I exclusively order the small ones. People often make fun of me for ordering the small coffee, but I always order them, and I have never won a prize. She's a liar.
I think there's an equal distribution. What photo?
I sent you guys a photo.
We saw your
Cameron's
photo.
All like, no. Cameron's all like, I'm in a different league, you know, with my Tim Hortons intake. Don't give me that.
Well, when it comes through, I'll
put that one on the show notes.
Right.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but I think you're just in a different league of not cleaning.
Well, that's true too.
Chris, this is so much Tim Hortons garbage. It looks like the inside of my car, but all in one spot.
It's pretty gross, Chris.
I also like the wine glass in the middle of all of your garbage.
I think I was drinking chocolate soy milk from it.
Okay.
They're in the limo. This is still a Seinfeld podcast, in case anyone's wondering. George decides to call his mother, and the phone call doesn't go well. It blows up on him.
No, his mom she's very critical. Just very George's mom. It's not a good situation. So then next, they're trying to figure out what's going on. They remember they're going to Madison Square Garden, O'Brien was from Chicago. Must be a Bulls-Knicks game. And they're very excited. This is the heyday of Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was the hugest at this time. And they were pretty excited.
Yeah.
Air Jordan. And so they decide on the way, they're going to pick up a lane.
Now, for those of you who don't know, Michael Jordan is a...
And so they think that they, you know, say they need to make another stop, and the driver says they know, and he takes a weird exit. They're going to pick up the other members of their party, and this is when they panic.
Now, let me ask you guys a question. Would you be able to do this? Do you think that you could pull off this scam? Would you have the nerve to go through with this?
They can't kill you. Well, not maybe, in the city.
They do kind of almost kill them. They draw guns on them. I think I could have done it under normal circumstances until, like, you know, things come out and we realize what the situation is. Then I might have been a little bit... I don't know how I held it together at that point.
What about
I'm not
you,
good at faking hate speak. Needs to be legitimate for me.
I don't know. I feel like I'm too much of a chicken to do this.
I'm far too cowardly. I mean, George is full of optimism about this idea. He's like, the guy doesn't know what O'Brien looks like. That's why he has the sign. But it's actually the opposite. The sign is because the famous person has no idea what this nondescript driver looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, when they're deciding, like, for a moment that maybe they could just, like, bail out, that they're going to be caught, and George's idea is to jump out of the car while it's moving, when they're turning the wrong way, it kind of reminded me of this idea. I used to always have this idea as a kid, right? So George's idea was that we could jump out of the car, and all we have to do is tuck and roll as we get out of this car moving at 60 miles an hour. I used to always think when I was a kid was that if I was in an elevator that was falling, all I would do is jump before it hit the ground, and I would be fine.
Didn't they do this on Mythbusters?
They did. He died.
See, the thing is, you can't jump nearly as fast as the elevator is falling.
Well, Patrick, I was six. I was hoping you'd both be like, I had that same idea, too.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
You know Galen? She was in a bad elevator accident.
Auntie Galen?
Yeah.
Recently?
No, not recently. It was like, you know, 10, maybe 12, 14 years ago. Where...
We'll include this in the show notes.
Well, you know?
You know, the whole elevator... I think the brakes failed, and then it fell a while, and then like they kicked back in, and it kind of went haywire a little bit. It was like bad.
You know, the Otis Elevator Company, their headquarters, just one floor.
I broke an elevator once.
Okay, how'd you break it?
Well, when I was working at Toys R Us, we had a service elevator, and what would happen is I would load it up in the bottom the bottom floor, and then it would go up to the loading bay. And, I was pretty cavalier with my job. I wasn't too concerned about my future career at Toys R Us.
That's a price.
So I know, right? So I was just pretty much just, you know, did a lot of stuff without a lot of care. And I put the pallet jack into the elevator. And now a pallet jack, for those that don't know about anything, has like two forks, two big metal forks that go underneath the pallets. And they're giant, like they're extremely...
So is this like a fork that goes into like a salad? Is that the sort of fork?
Only not at all.
Okay.
Well, two prongs.
Two prongs.
So that's you've seen these before, like in the grocery store when they're carrying around big pallets of food.
I understand. I'm telling a little... This is a little bit of humor.
It's a little joke, a little funny. Yeah. So I put the thing in the elevator, and then I didn't realize I had sort of... The elevator walls weren't really flush with the platform. There was, like, ridges that kind of The lips, you know, like you couldn't have things protruding over the platform or they would get caught. And I put this pallet jack in one of the prongs protruded over the platform. And I'm down to the bottom and I got my headphones on because I don't really care. And I'm putting the elevator up and I'm holding it to make it go up. And, you know, I've got the everything stacked in there pretty haphazardly. And I'm pushing it. It's going up. And I hear a bunch of things start to rattle around. And it's making noises and stuff like that. I can hear this through my headphones. And I'm thinking, some stuff's falling around. Some merchandise might get broken. I don't really care. And turns out the pallet had caught the lip of the prong, but had continued to move up. And it tore the elevator apart. They had to replace the good part of it. They had to... It was out of service for months.
So were you fired, Chris?
No.
He was actually promoted.
I think I would have fired you.
I would have fired me. I think I lied about it, is what the thing is.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
I'm pretty sure.
The elevator just tore itself apart.
Yeah.
Blame Otis.
Yeah, so that's that.
Well, so...
How did we start talking about this?
I don't know.
I'm not sure how you started talking about this.
So, anyway, back to the show.
Pallet jacks.
They stop the limo. They're picking up the other members of their party. And it's two blonde people, appropriately.
Just like you.
Just like me. And they're panicking. They cover George up. Pretend he's sleeping. O'Brien's really tired from
the best
trip.
Sleep pose I've ever seen.
He just kind of covers his face and leans back.
But, like, with both of his arms. It's not like he's just put, like, his hands in front of his face, which is already weird. It looks like he's been shot.
But, like, how long could they... I guess they're panicking, so they're not worried about how long they can get away with this. Anyway, it turns out the two people have not met him, haven't seen him before. But they're big fans of his newsletter and his book.
Now, do you guys recognize the actress in this scene?
No. She's blonde.
I did, but I couldn't place her.
Well, she is in another episode of Seinfeld, is why. She plays a completely different character. Suzanne Snyder is the name of the actress. She plays Audrey, who is Poppy's daughter. Poppy being the restaurateur who will not wash his hands.
Poppy. Who dates Poppy?
Who hates Poppy?
Or who dates Poppy's daughter?
Jerry does.
Jerry
does.
Wow. And then Poppy pees on his couch.
Yeah.
Do you think George is upset by that? Because he had a little thing for her.
Well, she's a different person. Same actress, different character.
Is she?
Maybe not. Maybe it's a cover.
Yeah. So anyway, this is her young white supremacist days. You know? She's running wild.
Salad days, really.
So anyway, the next scene... it's this other shot where they're on the street and Kramer meets Elaine where they're waiting for Jerry. And it's kind of a weird scene. Like it seems like Kramer and Elaine do not spend a lot of time together. Like right away, Kramer's like, how much do you make? Cause he's impressed that she took a cab and, you know, obviously she's not comfortable with this. You know.
Although I like your response to Kramer.
How much do you make?
He says he says he'll tell her how much he makes.
Oh.
But she knows. We all know.
How much does Kramer make?
He makes no money.
What?
Well, didn't he make a bunch of money? Wasn't there a thing that he made a bunch of money on recently? Like in the show?
Yeah, he won big money betting on horses.
That's right.
His mother was a mutter. His father was a mutter.
That's right.
So we established that
they've got a bug boy on them.
Elaine and Jerry Elaine and Kramer are hanging out on the street waiting for Jerry. And back to the limo. Ava, the woman, is breathless with excitement about O'Brien's book.
Well, I think we've skipped something here, Patrick.
What did we skip?
We missed Jerry's little mini monologue in the middle.
Oh.
Talking about the joys of being in a limo.
Oh, I didn't take notes on this.
Oh. Well, Jerry's got a little monologue part where he talks about how being in a limo isn't so great, Inside the limo, it's either one lonely old rich man or 50 students who all had $1.75 each. Have you ever been in a limo, Patrick?
Like a stretch limousine?
Just a limo. Any limo.
I've been in like a town car that was owned by a limousine company.
That's not a limo.
Yeah, it's...
Well, they called it a limo, and the guy called himself a chauffeur, so I guess no, then.
Because, I mean, I've been in a town car, too, and it was driven by a 60-year-old.
Yeah. Unless the people that you're talking to are also facing you, then it's not a limo. Tyler drove a limo for a summer. It was great. I was driving around a limo everywhere. It was awesome.
So did you like being in a limo?
I liked it because it felt like Tyler was my chauffeur for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a hell of a thing.
Cameron, have you ever been in a limo?
Strange story was that when I was working for a large video game company, the sort of like excess of money this company had at the time and possibly still has, they had run out of office space in their main building, and they had purchased another building while they were adding on to the main one. And they still needed their employees to be able to get back and forth between those buildings. So they figured that the cheapest way to do this was to hire this company that drives limo buses.
Like party buses?
Basically like a party bus. And they
was there a stripper pole in there?
No, but there was like a lot of like flashing lights, like coolers, places to like put drinks, weird mirrors, oddly patterned fabric everywhere. And so they literally drove that bus back and forth between these buildings from like 9 o'clock until 5:30 all day. And they were maybe 10 minutes apart. So I drove on that thing a lot, and it really ruined any sort of wonderful mystique of the limousine for me. And honestly, it was terrible in there. I don't care how dark down, like, it doesn't matter how dark those lights are or how flashy those lights inside are. It was a sad, dingy-looking affair. But I like to drive, too. I mean, like, I really like to drive. I don't like to be driven. So I don't know if I'd want to be in a limo.
I just don't see what the appeal is.
It's the status.
I like driving, and I like being in limos.
But being a limousine is not that expensive.
How much could a limo possibly cost? $10?
I
don't know.
But yeah, a limo is not that expensive. I don't know. I don't see the prestige. I think Jerry's right. So speaking of the limo, back in the limo, Ava, the woman, is breathless about O'Brien's book. She's so excited. You know, it's called like The Game or something. You know, we still don't quite know what's going on.
Or is it The Big Game?
The Big Game, The Game, something. And, then, you know, she hands him a copy of the speech that he's going to read at Madison Square Garden. George is a little concerned about this because he is not prepared to give a speech, obviously. Yeah. And she hands him a copy so he can read it over. Then back on the street, we learn that when they're picked up, they want to be called O'Brien and Murphy.
Yeah.
We really covered a lot of stuff all at once there.
Yeah. Well, we can go over it now.
So, number one, in the back of the limo, do they come off as, like, crazed cultists to you?
A little. I mean, they're a little reverent.
I mean, honestly, the only thing left to push George into crazier territory than he is now is that he becomes a racist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really strange and almost uncomfortable. And yet, this episode, never once does it... maybe at the very end. But largely, I feel like this episode comes across pretty well, despite the sort of edgy material and language found within it.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to make a white supremacist joke that isn't unsettling or sad.
Whatever do you mean?
Yeah, and so I think the scene on the street where they mentioned that Jerry and George need to be set called O'Brien and Murphy is a good, like, founding of, like, the suspicion that Kramer has about this whole situation. And then the next scene is where it all blows up. George starts reading the speech, And it's pretty offensive. Talks about how, like, Jewish people are bringing drugs in with black people and corrupting the poor white people. You know, I didn't really understand the whole thing. Pretty offensive. He's also a Holocaust denier, I guess. And so this is O'Brien. This is the person that that George is impersonating.
That George has chose to become.
Yeah.
Now, there's a weird bit in between the scenes where they have a newscast, mm-hmm. which has nothing to do with either location, the street corner, or with the back of the limo.
Well, it's at Madison Square Garden.
Like, it is, but I mean, it's weird because it's just... In Seinfeld, we don't ever really have that. We're always with characters.
Yeah.
This is literally as if we were in the TV, like we're looking directly at the TV.
Well, who wrote this episode? Was it someone new?
I believe it was Larry David and Larry Charles off the top of my head.
Okay, so it wasn't... well, Larry Charles, he was the one who did like the Quentin Tarantino episode, so maybe he's trying to be like experimental again, right?
But I mean, that Quentin Tarantino episode was really nothing like Quentin Tarantino.
I know, but that's just what he said, right? He fancies himself like a pretty fancy writer.
Fancies himself what? A fancy writer indeed.
Larry Charles is gonna stop listening to our show now.
Just Larry Charles, sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really mind it. I think it works. Like it moves the story along, you know.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty effective.
You know that like a lot of people really hate what's going on. But yeah, I think it works. Like, I think, you know, it moves the story along. It establishes that there's a lot of people protesting this thing at Madison Square Garden, that people know he's in town, that he's, like, reasonably famous. It's okay.
I think it's fine.
Yeah, and so they get a flat, you know, they think it's a gun shop. Obviously, everyone's on edge. And, you know, they go out, like, the dude goes out with a gun. What is the guy's name? The blonde guy? Does he have a name?
He has a name. I've forgotten what it is. I'll look it up.
So the blonde guy goes out with his gun, and they just, like, change the tire. And this is when we learn that O'Brien is, like, the leader of the Aryan Union, I guess, in this newscast. Tim?
Tim.
Oh, Tim, okay. Yeah. So, the next scene, they're on the street, and this is when Kramer, he thinks something's fishy about this whole thing, and they run into a friend who's going to go to the protest, and mentions that O'Brien is the leader of the Aryan Union. Kramer gets quite a look on his face.
He's suspicious. He does.
Yeah, I think he knows. I think at this point he knows something's up.
I like how Elaine's friend is just a mob of dudes with trench coats.
Yeah, they look like thugs. I mean, they're going to
the street toughs.
Yeah, I guess. It's a little weird. This whole street set is kind of weird.
It's got the most garbage cans in all of New York City.
Yeah, it looks kind of like Sesame Street to me. Like, it looks.
I thought it looked pretty good.
I don't know.
I wasn't impressed.
I guess it looks kind of like a street that could be on the original Batman movie. Or the 1980s Batman movie.
It's a good movie, though.
Like, I would expect, like, the Joker to come out of the alley and, like, shoot Bruce Wayne's parents or something.
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Pale moonlight. There you go.
You ever eat the bark off a pineapple?
There we go.
I eat the whole apple. So back in the limo, you know, the tire's still being changed, and Jerry and George, they want to get out of this situation. Obviously, things are heating up. You know, there's guns.
This seems like, this whole setup seems like such a, like a Ferris Bueller thing just gone horribly wrong.
Yeah, kind of. Like, it seems like they're going to have a great time, you know, maybe... You know, stand out of the sunroof and yell woo.
Yeah.
It does not happen that way.
No. Nazis.
Yeah, and there's a pretty funny line. So when Tim comes back in, he's on the phone. He tried to call 911, but the guy came in, and he's like, AstroTurf! It's because of the Jews.
Yeah.
Jews hate grass. They always have. Tim seems to buy it, though. It works, even though that's the weirdest thing ever. The weirdest prejudice. And so they don't know what to do, but they're just going to wait till they get to Jerry's corner, where they pick up Elaine and Kramer, and just try to jump out.
Well, it's not actually moving this time.
Yeah. Well, not at 65 miles an hour. Yeah.
Tuck and roll. Just tuck and roll.
So on the street, we cut back to Kramer. Kramer has concluded that Jerry is the leader of the Aryan Union.
He's very neat.
He's very neat. And Elaine has a great line that says, she says that Jerry's not a Nazi, he's just very neat.
I mean, it's true.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I like that that's the link between Jerry and Nazism. He's a fastidious, clean man.
It's also the link between Jerry and being gay.
Yeah.
I also like just to like slowly... Oh no, I guess it's in the... I'm jumping ahead now.
Okay.
But I've got a hell of a thing to say in a moment.
So back to the limo. Tim starts to suspect Jerry and O'Brien. He says O'Brien doesn't really look like an O'Brien. And Jerry does not look like a Murphy. And so Jerry kind of breaks into this... He insists that he's from Dublin, and he breaks into this really bad Irish brogue and talks about the peat.
'Tis a beautiful country.
It's a really bad accent. And I don't know why he feels like he just needs to start breaking into it. I guess because he's panicking that he's going to die. But, I mean, he's spoken with a perfect American accent up until this point.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
I think talking about peat is the most quintessential idea of like what an old Irishman might say. A 19th century Irishman.
Love to burn that peat for fuel.
Aye, the peat.
But you know, we glossed over something, which is that George had a real shot with the hot Nazi.
He did. You know, she, like, when the car had a tire break.
Yeah.
When the car had a tire break,
Why is Ava... RoboCop in the back?
I don't understand this picture at all.
Murphy!
I knew this was O'Brien. Oh, I get it.
Oh.
Can we put this picture up?
It might be offensive.
It is offensive.
I mean, I think if you changed the dialogue...
Oh.
What font is this?
Comic Sans. I always do Comic Sans.
Is it every single week?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was blue this time. It's not usually blue.
Maybe it was the blue.
Not working for you.
I think the dialogue might be a little too edgy for even our listeners.
Okay, on, so yeah, it's true.
Chris wants to discuss this.
So Ava is thrown on top of George. She says she'll do anything for him, and George, I think this is a weird situation, but it seems to point to this idea that George is a prude, you know?
Huh?
Well, we talked about... Oh, maybe you weren't on the show, but we talked about, like, how George... Like, the one where Kramer's recording the, like, fake sex tape interview, George is totally flustered.
Yeah.
You know? And I think this is the same kind of thing. When she, like, is making an advance... He's just kind of like,
it's quite the same thing. I think it's on the one hand, with Elaine, it was like this like goofing around thing, and he was already really attracted to her and already embarrassed. Whereas this is just sort of thrust upon him, and he's just not smooth.
Yeah, I'm not sure I could be too smooth with a Nazi coming on to me.
I mean, she is a belligerent racist.
Yeah.
But, you know what? I thought about it. And it would have been okay for him to exploit this. Because she reminded me a lot of the hot Nazi from Last Crusade. And Indy totally got with her. And but if it's okay...
He didn't know she was a Nazi.
Yeah, I don't care about that part. If it's okay for Indiana Jones, then if that's not a moral high bar to jump off over, no, to pole vault over, it's fine, is what it means.
I'm glad you're back on the show, Chris.
So, you know what? Chris Young is back. Another part of our show is back this week. Do you know what it is, Patrick?
No.
It's time to do our accent impressions in the spirit of Jerry Seinfeld's perfect Irish accent. I don't know what
was that. that was like an Italian R, like that roll.
It is time to begin. Let's offend someone from Ireland. Chris, let's hear your best Irish accent.
I got it. All right. Arr, matey.
That was pretty good. Yeah,
pretty good, Patrick.
They're pirates, see?
I'm Cillian Murphy.
What's great about that is that our frequent contributor to this show, Justin Armstrong, will tell you that it's pronounced Cillian Murphy.
I'm Cillian Murphy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Spring cleaning.
Lucky charms and such.
You sounded kind of like a witch on that one.
Yeah, which pirate?
Okay, Cameron?
I know the Pete, my boy. Danny boy.
Good.
Did the Irish sing Danny boy?
Doesn't everybody sing Danny boy?
I think that's a Scottish song, maybe.
Well, that's my Scottish roots shining through.
Oof.
We've got a great show for you this week. A great show.
I don't know. This whole Irish thing does not seem to go well. We cut back to the street. Kramer's pieced the whole thing together. Jerry and George, the two normal... They're in the CIA. Comedians, they're sick, twisted people. Jerry's too normal. He couldn't be a comedian. And so, what do you guys think about this theory? Do you think he could ever be in the CIA, Jerry or George?
Absolutely not.
Not so much.
Do you think you could be, Patrick?
Well, I'm not an American. That would probably be a hindrance.
Well, could you be in CSIS?
No. I feel like it would be a boring job.
Tell that to the guy that sold all of our military secrets to the Russians.
Listening to wiretaps all day. Sitting in that car. Oh, it seems boring.
You can listen to, I don't know where I was going with that.
Okay.
Randy Bachman's Wiretap Cafe.
Every CBC show. And so this is where the two scenes merge. The limo stops on the street to try to pick them up. Jerry and George want to escape, but they can't because it's too, these guys want to beat O'Brien up because Kramer points out that Jerry is O'Brien. So they run back into the limo. And Tim is a little confused because Kramer is calling Jerry O'Brien, which has swapped the two characters.
I love that all over the city there are just angry mobs trying to get down to Madison Square Garden.
People hate the area.
But I mean, they're hanging out at a bus stop with metal poles.
Yeah, the city's in a tizzy.
So Chris, it being New York, is this normal in New York?
I feel like if there's one place where people would be used to crackpots spewing out just random gibberish in the streets about what ethnicity they didn't like, it'd be a place like, it'd be New York. I feel like people wouldn't care.
I feel like you'd probably still care.
But I don't think there'd be like these giant riots or whatever. Someone's gonna come to Madison Square, someone's gonna stand in the street and say something about, you know.
But I mean, I think there's a difference between a random person on the street who's a racist and a giant organized hate-in event at Madison Square Garden.
I feel like I would go to protest that. Who, you know, I'm not going to stand idly by. Like, the Nazis are some of the world's greatest villains. Who wouldn't want to?
They're definitely the world's greatest movie villains.
Yeah. Who wouldn't want a chance to go protest them?
Throw some eggs and tomatoes. You know what? I would do it, actually. I would do it so I could throw eggs and tomatoes. Like, can you imagine a legitimate...
You would have been happy in the 16th century.
Chris. Who's going to be mad at you for throwing eggs or tomatoes at neo-Nazis?
At a Nazi.
Neo-Nazis?
You would everyone would be like, yeah, you hit him right in the eye.
I feel like there has to be a bit of masochism in being a neo-Nazi. You know the world hates you.
I think you've got some issues all around.
So anyway... there's a pretty great line when Kramer says, when O'Brien calls, the limo, and Kramer's like, O'Brien, that's weird.
It is strange. O'Brien's already there.
It's such a great Kramer line, and... such an understatement in this instance. It's pretty great.
I kind of like the idea that maybe it's weird because Kramer still believes that Jerry is somehow this O'Brien character.
Oh, so you think he's not just saying that to like diffuse the situation? You think he really believes that Jerry is a CIA agent who's?
Did you O'Brien. See how passionate Kramer was out on the street defending this position?
Yeah, he said he like. Grasped Elaine and said he would never let them touch her.
I like how when he goes to save her, he puts her like whole face in his chest.
And Elaine's just trying to get away from him.
I wonder why.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And so the pressure is on. Eventually, the whole gang ends up with guns trained on them. They're all speaking at once, trying to explain themselves, except for Kramer, who's just kind of calmly looking out the window. Waiting for it to end, and eventually, they're kicked out. They've had enough.
That's the one part of the episode where the violence almost seems surprising. It's like the guns trained on them for that long.
Yeah.
That being said, it's a short moment, but it is odd.
How many episodes of Seinfeld are there even guns in?
I don't know, maybe less, five or less.
Yeah, it's weird. There's even like a whole case of guns. It's weird.
Also... I don't know if you guys noticed this, but the newscaster, when she's like, O'Brien's coming up now, she's interviewing this guy who just looks like a straight-up hipster doofus.
Yeah, I said he looked like he was in the Beastie Boys in the early 90s. It was pretty good.
Now, wasn't there
He had, like, a big
point...
fur coat and, like, huge, huge glasses. Like, Elizabeth Taylor glasses.
What about the point where they're about to get out and, like, someone, like, recognizes him and is like, it's O'Brien, they get back in. Doesn't everybody not know what O'Brien looks like?
No one knows what he looks like.
So how did that guy in the street identify George as being like, oh, it's O'Brien?
Because Kramer said, it's O'Brien. He's like, O'Brien!
What I really like is that inside this limo, there are two people with guns trained on a group of four people.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, you can see into this limo because Elaine recognizes her friend outside. Why is nobody outside who's looking in concerned that there's two people holding people up at gunpoint inside? And then somehow, how does George end up being labeled as O'Brien once he gets kicked out of this limo?
Yeah, so there's a later scene where it shows like the newscaster talking to him, and it's George saying he's not O'Brien, but the little text on the screen says, Donald O'Brien, racist. yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it happens, but it's a whole ball of confusion. It's pretty good. And that's kind of it. That's the episode. We don't know how it's resolved. Presumably, George gets out of it somehow.
George goes away for a little while.
Yeah. And there's the final monologue where George or Jerry talks about there's the big hail that you see all the time in World War II movies. You know, you've seen it. You've all seen it. Arms straight up. And there's the little hail, which is for, you know, just casual times, you know, around the office. Yeah, that's it.
I didn't have too much to say about this outro. It's some real edgy Nazi humor.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I thought it was good. A little casual hail.
It started off, I thought, with a lot of promise. And as much as they kind of devolved into the most ridiculous sort of scenario that could have possibly happened, it just sort of seemed, it was okay.
You mean in the monologue or the episode in general?
In the episode.
Okay, yeah, we can talk about the overall episode. Yeah, I don't know. The ending, I don't know how it could end it any other way, though, right? Like, the tension just keeps ratcheting up, and then eventually, you know, they're in Madison Square Garden. Everyone hates O'Brien. I don't know what they're supposed to do.
I mean, on a whole, I feel pretty similarly about the episode. I mean, it's a pretty funny episode, and yet just its sort of logical conclusion that it can go to, like, the episode ends basically the way it has to end, I feel like. Like, I feel like there's nowhere else that they could take that episode. And yet, at the same time, I think it's pretty commendable how they managed to dance around so much of the content of this episode, which would probably be fairly objectionable.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely did a better job than in episodes like the episode with the alcoholic. Oh. Sorry.
Get out of here. You cats are crazy. Go, go.
Dem cats be crazy.
So they definitely do a better job than the episode where, like, there was the alcoholic, where there's just kind of a sad tone to the whole episode. this is a much better picture. yeah, there's just kind of a sad tone to the episode. This one, they dealt with, like, almost comic book racism in a pretty funny way. It was pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
There was no sadness, I found, in the whole episode. That was good. I liked that.
Yeah, I like feeling not sad.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, not sad is one of my top emotions.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, if you have any interest in the things that were said over the course of this episode so far, you can head over to whatsthedealshow.com. We've got all the show notes. You can find out about Chris's picture, Tim Hortons, poutine, maybe even the poutician.
Belinda Stronach,
Canada's national treasure. She's...
She's a real queen, that woman.
Woo! All right. We've got it all there. And you know what? If this episode wasn't enough for you, check out the back episodes. We've got them there, too. You can listen to The Boyfriend, The Fix-Up, all the episodes.
Chinese Restaurant.
Chinese Restaurant. You name it. The Parking Lot.
You know, actually,
not the parking lot.
The Chinese Restaurant. I'm surprised that Chris didn't complain about this being kind of a bottle episode.
I don't feel like this was a bottle episode.
Okay, that's good.
Checkmate. Do you know what
I don't know. Like, I don't think so. It didn't feel like it, at least. Not like the parking garage. Maybe it's because they're moving the whole time. You know, they move from JFK to downtown.
So because the car is in motion.
That's right.
You like a moving bottle episode.
That's right.
Okay.
Do you know what else you can see at What's the Deal show? You can see other business.
Ooh.
Ooh-wee, baby, which we are about to delve into right now. Other business being the part of the episode where we delve into the weird, the esoteric, the bizarre. And this week, we're going back to everyone's favorite country. Japan. There's another big trend. And it's not bagel heads. No, no. It's a little thing called sushi cats. The weird new trend in Japan. And so let me read to you about this. A bizarre new ad campaign brings new meaning to the word catfish and is causing a buzz in Japan. The Tange and Nakimushi Peanuts Company has created a range of prints featuring cats resting on sushi rolls, calling them sushi cats or neko sushi in Japanese. Neko sushi ga oishii desu.
Hai.
Do you know what I said?
No.
Sushi cats?
Sushi cats are delicious.
Oh, hi hi.
Or maybe wa ga oishii? I don't know. It's delicious. While some of the cats look somewhat cute posing on sticky rice, others appear terrified, and some are just downright strange. But that hasn't stopped them from gaining a cult-like following in Japan and elsewhere in the world. The cats already have their own Facebook page along with postcards and photos and a mobile game app you can download, according to the Daily Mail. The company even put together a tongue-in-cheek video titled The History of Sushi Cats Explained, suggesting that cats have been around for centuries and can even be found in early cave paintings. Cute, mean, or just plain weird? Patrick Armstrong, I defer to you first.
I mean, if you, as a listener, have not looked at the photos of sushi cats, you're missing out, because they're pretty amazing. I kind of love them. The one of the, like, of the tamago sushi, which is, like, the eggy sushi.
Ah, tamago.
It's pretty amazing. They're all really good, though. Oh, my. If you just Google image search for sushi cat, oh, man. I'm not going to deny that I love it. They're amazing. Yeah, I don't know. What? Wait, did you say this was a peanut company?
Yes, so... just let me backtrack into this important news story here. I got a little carried away with
it. What does sushi cat have to do with peanut?
What does it have to do with peanut? What doesn't it have to do with the peanut company?
Well, there aren't often peanuts in sushi. That is what it does not have to do with.
I think I've actually crashed... The one viewer on their webpage has crashed it. Let me pull it back up. But yes, it's the... I think it's like Tanage and something Sushi Co. Or Peanut Co. Here we are. No, their server is down on Sushi Cats. I can no longer retrieve the story. But by the time it's back up, we can discuss it.
How do you think this started? Like, do you think that just one of the members... Like, one of the people who work for this company was like, my cat kind of looks like a piece of fish. What if I put him on top of rice and dress him up like a sushi?
To be honest, when I look at this, I just kind of can't believe no one's done this before.
I know, right? It seems like
it just seems
idea.
Like this is what the internet was made for.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So Chris has sent us a link from his favorite webpage here, BuzzFeed, also known as the bottom of the internet.
Shut up.
And, here they all are, the, sushi cats.
Oh, it's pretty good.
Look at the one with the little bondage leather hat and just money all over him. What's going on there? My favorite thing about sushi cats is that they're all the cats are looking up at the photographer, like, with the same just bewildered expression on their faces. Like, I don't know what you're doing to me right now.
I mean, so we'll have this list up here, and if you go down to number 9, I think number 9 is perhaps my favorite of the sushi cats.
He's got jowls.
He's got the best expression.
They're all amazing, though. Okay, I'm gonna say I unabashedly love sushi cats.
Yeah, I'd almost like a print of a sushi cat right now, actually.
This is probably the most
positive. Who would want a sushi cat?
This is probably the most... I mean, I guess we all really liked IKEA Monkey.
That's true.
Oh, the sushi cat video is pretty great, too.
Yeah, so also available on the page is a video about sushi cats. I'm not listening to any audio, but oh, there's the sushi cat in cave paintings. Yeah, this sushi cat is so Nazca line sushi cat.
Oh, I love them.
Okay, I gotta go.
Sushi cat hieroglyphics.
I have to stop watching this video right now.
I give sushi cats 100% approval.
This does seem perfect. There doesn't seem to be anything better than a sushi cat right
now. I love sushi. Very delicious. I love cats.
Sushi cats.
I love the ping pong sushi cat. They're great. 100%. A+.
Cameron? Then there's just the one where it's like the roll and the cat's been miniaturized and found himself in it. Like the sushi roll is his litter box.
Well, that one's a kitten. It's not a full cat. It's a baby one. It hasn't grown
into a full sushi. It's pretty good.
See, what I like about it is that, you know, there's no attempt to make the cats really seem like food. Like, it's cats posed with adorable things, like, you know, ping pong or a nice stylish backpack. And that's like what sushi's little... made of.
Wrapped as a little nigiri sushi.
Yeah.
I just love cat number 9 so much. His facial expression. And his little orange tie. But oh god, his facial expression.
No, I still like 13 a lot.
So you like the bondage cat.
I like the bondage cat. Well, he's got all the money. Like, it's like... He's a stripper. Cat. Yeah, that's been, like, put into his G-string. Someone made it rain for that
currency.
Cat.
Oh, I guess that's probably Japanese.
And I don't think it... Oh, no, it says the Japan Game Company.
Oh.
Patrick, who's Legal your favorite tender. Of the sushi cats on this list here? If you had to pick one. There's a little cat with pickles on his back.
Ping Pong's pretty...
11 looks so happy. Like, he's the one... It's like... 11 looks discontent to be a sushi cat.
11 is pretty good. I don't know. They're all pretty great. I think maybe I'm with you, Cameron. I think number 9, the cat with the tie and the startled face.
I'm also a pretty big fan of number 5 here, mm-hmm. who looks embarrassed because he has a giant chive and...
I think it's a leek.
That's right, he's got a leek and a lobster on his head.
That's right.
But the egg one is pretty good, too. The first one we saw. I don't know where he is.
I think he's number 10 on this list. Number 10.
Yeah, number 10's pretty great. He's probably the handsomest sushi.
Oh, man. Who would have expected? You know, we have some listeners who complain that, you know, we always all hate on the same objects. But this week, we are in total approval.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah, sushi cats. Way of the future.
Way of the future.
Way of the future.
Way of the future.
Show me all the blueprints.
Way of the future. 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 Future.
Way of the future.
Way of the future.
I don't listen to that podcast.
That's also in that movie, The Aviator.
Oh boy. So, I would like to say right now as well, we did not make it very clear in last week's episode that there would be no other business, and we did receive some complaints about the lack of other business.
Who complained?
I think we know who complained.
Oh.
There's no time.
It was a double episode.
I know. We give and we give and we give. We don't charge for these. These are free.
Yeah, if you want to start paying, we'll give you as much double other business as you want. We'll give you double other business. We'll give you all.
I've been charging people.
How much has your mom been paying every week?
Not just my mom.
That was a sweet yo mama joke. So yeah, it's the Tange and Nakemushi Peanuts Company. How is this advertising peanuts?
Yeah, that's the part I don't understand.
What's the problem with BuzzFeed?
Can we not make this about BuzzFeed?
You're the worst.
Man, there are just so many great Sushi Cat pictures. All right,
14
well,
is really unhappy. Like, 14 is, like, legitimately doesn't want to be here. It's a giant goldfish cracker on the back of him, too.
Yeah, he looks good. He's also covered in leaves.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this was great. This was great having you back, Chris.
Yeah, it's great. It's good to have you back.
Good to be back.
I mean, the episodes are going to be a lot harder to edit now, but... it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on some shows, they say the best stuff's left on the cutting room floor.
That's not the case on our show.
For our show, it's the most offensive parts are left on the cutting room floor. How's it feel to be back, Chris? Are you liking it?
Feels great.
It's just great. Like that. It's like that popular expression I coined. It's just like falling off a bike.
You never forget how.
That's true. I mean, I legitimately thought that was the expression. Apparently, it's like riding a bike.
Yeah.
But what's easier than falling off a bike? You don't even need any special skills to do that. Just get on and fall off.
You need to be able to ride the bike.
You're right, we should amend the saying.
We must change the system!
Ba-da.
We're living in a society here.
Okay.
Oh, that was great. So, You know, Chris, while you were gone, you missed a great many things, but I know you were a slave to all of our back episodes. You heard my story about buying the giant box of condoms.
Mm-hmm.
You heard Patrick's story about buying a small pack of condoms.
For my small penis.
I meant the total number, but...
So did I. I only have one penis.
Oh, and I'm the offensive one.
The fact that Patrick said the word penis or that he said he had one is offensive to you.
I'm the one that gets all my stuff cut off the show.
Is this about your penis?
Isn't everything about my penis? Sushi cats.
Is penis allowable under the Apple censorship guidelines for self-flagging? For
I think so.
So we can say it?
I think penis is okay, yeah.
Penis is okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I think certain slang words for penis are not acceptable.
Like dong.
Or donger.
Or dong.
Or John Thomas.
Or dingus.
Dinganator. 5,000. That's the robotic Dinganator. So, you can, of course, as always, head over to whatsthedealshow.com and check out everything we did on this fine evening. Sure, some of you might think, an hour and a half for this? Well, you're wrong.
Is only 20 minutes long.
There's way more than an hour and a half of this. Head on to whatsthedealshow.com, where we have all of our back episodes, all of our show notes, all of our pictures, and hey, we even have some social media links available to you. Isn't that right, Patrick?
Yeah, if you want to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet at WTDShow, you can see us interact with Felix. other people who like our show.
Like Toots Lavalia.
And if you just want to see... You know, make sure you don't miss an episode. Just follow us. We post all the episodes there. That's a good way to follow it. Or you can follow us on Facebook. We also post all the episodes there. We're at facebook.com/whatsthedealshow. All the episodes are posted there, usually.
Now, are we compatible with chat heads now?
Yes. I don't know. Probably not. I don't think you can chat with WTD Show.
Can you get us on the HTC One?
Yeah, if you have an HTC One, if you have an HTC First, just visit What's the Deal Show, and you'll follow us. Or you can, if you follow us, just all the episodes will show up on your home screen.
Ceaselessly.
Yeah, all the pictures we post. And so, yeah, you can do that. I think that's it. I think that's all our social networking.
Now, who's going to get in contact with you personally? How do they do that?
If you want to get in contact with me personally, you can email me at cameron.wong@gmail.com.
It's a good thing that's not my real email address.
Yeah. What else?
I think that's it. How do people actually get a hold of you? Aren't you doing this part anymore? I thought you were giving our Twitter accounts if someone wanted to get a hold of us.
Oh, yeah. If you want to get a hold of us, I'm at Old Patrick A. Cameron's at Ota Wong. And Chris is at Chris Not Young. You can follow any of us. You can tweet us. You can retweet us. We tweet very good tweets.
So at this moment, right now, the province newspaper is running an Indiegogo for alleged Rob Ford crack video to help them purchase it. This is 100% real.
Oh man, this is going to be amazing.
I mean, lots of people thought Rob Ford was smoking crack, but not really.
Wow, help us buy the Rob Ford video. So, we've talked about Rob Ford on the show before, and before Chris tells you how to leave us a 5-star rating, Rob Ford, the exceedingly unpopular mayor of Toronto, at least with the rest of the country, has been caught in a video purportedly showing him to be smoking crack cocaine. The owner is requesting $100,000 for the video. And the province is running an Indiegogo and says, together, perhaps we can pay that. Surely there are 107,500 people who would be willing to pay $1 to see this video. Apparently there's $7,500 in fees associated with this.
I would pay a dollar to see this video.
Yeah.
It already has $23.
Oh man, this is definitely going to leak. I bet tomorrow. This guy's going to make so much money from this video.
Chris Young, if someone wanted to leave us a rating, how would they do that?
Well, they could go to iTunes and they could select which sushi cat was their favorite and rate the sushi cats, you know, 1 out of 5 stars. And really the only answer, like everything on this show, is all sushi cats deserve 5 stars.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go to iTunes and rate our podcast with also 5 stars. That would be good, too.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
That's it. Can you believe that? What is this? This is an hour and 34 minutes we're at right now. And this after we cut that down, like, what are we at? 4 minutes?
Yeah, this is going to be a tight episode.
It is. Man, look at Sushi Cat number 9. Look at his little face. Look at his scared, terrified little face.
I love him.
Oh, good grief almighty. That was great. Oh, you know what we didn't do?
What?
We gotta talk about next week's episode.
Oh.
You know, everyone is just on the edge of their seat wondering, when can I get some more What's the Deal show? this hasn't been enough.
Well, they're not thinking about switching to another podcast.
No.
They're not thinking about listening to music. They're not thinking about just putting away their phone and not listening to anything at all. They want the next episode.
Well, if they're looking for it, they have The Good Samaritan to look forward to. The 37th episode of the sitcom Seinfeld. It is the 20th episode of the 3rd season. And it is the only episode of Seinfeld to be directed by one of the show stars. The always modest and humble Jason Alexander. In this episode, Jerry sees a hit-and-run incident and becomes a bit torn about what to do when discovering that the women involved are very attractive. George, meanwhile, decides that when people say anything but God bless you for a sneeze, they have no manners and potentially ruins a relationship.
You're so good looking.
All right. Sounds good. So tune in next week. Check it out. Let me go ahead right now and say to all of our listeners, thank you very much for sticking with us. We are now, what is this, episode 35? Is that true?
35.
35 episodes in. We are almost the better part of a full year into this show now. And our listenership continues to grow. And, you know, on behalf of all of us, I'd like to say that we appreciate your listenership.
Yeah, it's
great. Yeah, thanks for tuning in.
Yeah,
hey, great. Happy birthday, John.
Huh? Yeah, shout out to our listener, John, who's celebrating his 42nd birthday this week.
I like how we have so few listeners that we can just name them by first name.
Okay.
You know what? This is probably the only time in history he has only been referred to by his first name, at least by us.
We have to protect his privacy.
Yeah, that's true.
Because otherwise, all of our listeners would stalk him down.
Definitely.
Well, he just has them.
Sure.
End the stalking.
All right, well, as always, a hearty thank you from Christopher Young.
Yeah.
Patrick Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
And myself, Cameron Wong. Thank you very much, and we will be with you again next week. Easy to beat. Wow. I'm not sure how this... How did this episode only run an hour and 37 minutes? Because this feels like our longest episode
Well,
yet.
We recorded 20 minutes of pre-roll and then dumped that.
But it wasn't even pre-roll. We actually introduced the show. It was 20 minutes of introduction before we even started talking about the episode. Well.